Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning, September 28. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 Eastern Standard Time. And you can hear us from anywhere online at 883-WPPB.org. And every show is archived on my website at AnnLiguori.com and on podcasts heard in most places. And what a gorgeous day. It's going to be a gorgeous weekend. Bright sunshine today with a high of 73 out here in the east end of Long Island. 68 degrees right now. And I love this time of year. My favorite time of year, certainly, out here in the Hamptons. And hope you guys are having a great start to what looks to be a beautiful weekend. Yesterday was dazzling. Just flew in from Florida, where I was visiting with Mom Cecilia for a week. She sends her hellos. Anyway, I'm going to be it's a very exciting morning because Jerry Cooney and I have been friends for a long, long time. And this morning we are going to reconnect right here on the show. Long Island Zone, former boxer extraordinaire, now talk show host on Sirius, and he recently penned a biography with a gentleman named John Grady, and it's called Gentleman Jerry, A Contender in the Ring, A Champion in Recovery. And it chronicles his career, the challenges and triumphs of a trauma survivor, and an alcoholic's journey to sustained recovery. So it goes way beyond boxing and his career in that sport. It really gets into, you know, his journey to sustained recovery. He had a very abusive father. His childhood was really just very disturbing. And, you know, he just had to overcome so much to not only succeed, but to thrive. And now he's hosting, he's been hosting a radio show on Sirius. He's out in LA to cover a few fights tonight at the Staples Center. So we'll catch up with Jerry Cooney, probably one of the most charitable sports personalities I know. Just a lovely guy. So looking forward to that. And then in the second half of the show, Diana DeLuca, the CEO of a publication called Golf Kitchen, will join me. Diana is the editor-in-chief at Golf Kitchen Magazine, the founder of Golf Kitchen Culinary Excellence Awards. She hosts Golf Kitchen events. She is a photographer, a book producer. And Diana spent time at our charity outing this past June, both at our VIP dinner the night before, where there was just an extraordinary, it was an amazing culinary experience. And she can describe the food for, better than I can, because that's her field. And she's an expert in that world and photographing it and talking about it. And she also came to our outing at the beautiful West Hampton Country Club on June 20th. And they did an incredible job with their brunch and dinner. So we will explore two of my favorite topics, and perhaps yours too, golf and food. Can you imagine marrying these two industries, really? It's just such a fun career for Diana, and we'll learn all about it in the second half of the show. Let's look at some of the top sports stories. Well, very disturbing story of Antonio Brown has been in the news, and really, when you look at his career, the rise and fall of this star receiver in the NFL. He went to 7 Pro Bowls and 9 seasons with the Steelers, was traded to Oakland in March, released by the Raiders. Patriots quickly signed him days before he was accused of rape in a civil lawsuit, and then they released him last week after a second woman in 10 days accused him of sexual misconduct. The first woman, his former trainer, said he assaulted her 3 times, including rape. And personally, I was shocked that the Patriots signed him and allowed him to play, you know, one game despite all that was going on. I know he has to go through, you know, the whole trial, and you're innocent until proven guilty. But, you know, there was just so much attention around it. After he was fired from the Patriots, he took shots at their owner, Robert Kraft, on Twitter. And just doesn't use good judgment. That's the least of his worries, obviously. He's hoping to get a $9 million signing bonus from the team. But when you look at the rise and fall of a personality like Antonio Brown, it's just, you know, you just have to wonder, you know, what is he thinking? I mean, the whole scenario reeks of feeling entitled and plain stupidity and just so many different issues in sports. So we will have to examine that issue in a show in the future. To lighten up the topics here, well, in the Major League Baseball, all the playoff spots were complete after yesterday's games. The Tampa Bay Rays and the A's, the Oakland A's, are in playoff spots. Tampa Bay back in the playoffs for the first time since 2013. They will meet the A's on Wednesday night in the AL wild card game. Tampa Bay actually had the lowest payroll in the majors at $66 million. The highest payroll went to the Red Sox, the defending champions. They spent $228 million, but they never recovered from a slow start, and they will not be playing in the postseason. I'm from Cleveland. Unfortunately, Cleveland was eliminated with their 8-2 loss to the Nationals last night. Houston clinched home field advantage throughout the American League playoffs with their 4-0 win over the Angels, and the Yankees will face Minnesota in the best-of-five division series starting late next week. In football, the New York Giants will face the Washington Redskins tomorrow. It's going to be Sunday already. All eyes will be on Daniel Jones to see if he can help lift the Giants to their second straight win of the season. They are 1-2 overall so far. Last week, they played well enough to beat the Bucs, rallying from a 28-10 halftime deficit without Saquon Barkley. But let's be realistic. Had Matt Gay's field goal not gone wide right, the Giants would be 0-3. However, having said that, the 6'5" rookie, Daniel Jones, he did engineer a 32-31 comeback victory while throwing for 336 yards, two touchdowns, adding two more rushing scores on the day. So it was quite the debut for Daniel Jones and very exciting for New York. Both Washington and New York drafted quarterbacks in the first round of this year's NFL draft. And everybody thought it would be Dwayne Haskins who was going to get the nod first to start for the Redskins. Whether the Redskins will replace veteran Case Keenum with Haskins is still to be determined. But all eyes will be on Daniel Jones for sure, and the Giants game time 1 p.m. tomorrow on Fox. In golf, England's Matthew Jordan carded a second-round 64 to claim a one-shot lead at the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship at St. Andrews yesterday in Scotland. Jordan made five birdies and an eagle on the first eight holes in a bogey-free round, finished the day at 14 under. After 36 holes, the tournament is played over three courses with one round played each on Carnoustie, the Old Course, and King's Barnes before the final round at St. Andrews. Wow, what a cool tournament that is. And at the Safeway Open at Silverado Country Club in Napa Valley, California, Bryson DeChambeau, he shot a bogey-free 8-under 64 to take a two-shot lead in the Safeway Open. After beginning the second round with four straight pars, DeChambeau, he birdied number five, sank a 35-footer for birdie on number six, had a tap-in for another birdie on eight, and then he opened the back nine with three straight birdies and made another birdie to close it out on the first hole. Tony Romo, the former NFL quarterback, current CBS TV analyst, he missed the cut following a 78 yesterday, but he shot a 2-under 70 on Thursday with five birdies in his first round. Good round on the first day. He was playing on a sponsor exemption. He entered yesterday five shots back, but unfortunately missed the cut with that 78. Had he made the cut, he planned to skip Sunday's NFL broadcast in Chicago of the game he was supposed to announce between the Bears and the Vikings. So he's going to stick to his day job. Phil Mickelson shot 69 yesterday after an opening 75, including a quadruple bogey. He goes home early. So Phil will not play as well. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and say hello to my buddy Jerry Cooney, who with John Grady penned a book called Gentleman Jerry, A Contender in the Ring, A Champion in Recovery. But first, let me tell you that Sports Interview with Ann Liguori is brought to you in part by Dune Jewelry and My Hamptons Robe Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course in timeless pieces for men and women. DuneJewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses, PEAK Vision Sunglasses. Zero distortion, unmatched clarity, change your game. PeakVision.com.
WPPB's host of the Urban Jazz Experience and Friday Night Soul, Ed German's closing party for his portrait exhibit will happen on Sunday, October 6th from noon to 4 at Cava Vaughn Wine Bar and Restaurant in New Haven at 975 State Street. Final offers can be made on Ed's 20 musical portrait paintings. All proceeds will benefit WPPB. Information available at info@jazzhaven.com.
Join us for Sundays on the East End with Bridget Leroy and Alex Sokolow, a free-flowing conversation with musicians, magicians, artists, writers, scientists, and other local people who cast their own interesting shadows across the East End. Like us on Facebook to see who's coming up on Sundays on the East End with Bridget Leroy and Alex Sokolow, every Sunday at 11 a.m. here on 88.3 WPPB-FM, Long Island's only NPR station.
In communities around the globe, women are making a difference through actions and viewpoints. I'm Allison Dunn, and each week on 51%, I'll bring you into these women's lives, whether at home, in politics, through the arts, or anywhere else, as we learn about the insightful, quirky, and heartbreaking stories that make us who we are and help us to appreciate others.
Listen every Monday at 11 p.m. on 88.3 FM.
Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori. So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 Eastern Standard Time. And you can hear us from anywhere online at 883WPPB.org, on podcasts, and each show is archived at AnnLiguori.com. And joining me now is longtime buddy, one of the most charitable people on the planet, and now co-author with John Grady of his story. The book is called Gentleman Jerry, A Contender in the Ring, A Champion in Recovery. Good morning, Jerry Cooney. So glad to have you on Sports Interview. How are you?
And I got to tell you, you sound so great, so uplifting, and it's great to be on with you. And I'm doing well. I'm out in California, so it's a little, 3 hours earlier here. But we're having a great time. There's a very big fight tonight with Errol Spence and Shawnee Showtime Porter. And David Benavidez and Anthony Durrell. So it's exciting out here because I'm with my peeps. You know what I mean? I'm with my people, and the atmosphere is exciting, and it's just it's going to be a great night tonight. And I'm so glad to be out here with these with my guys, and I'm so glad I'm still in the fight game.
You are in the fight game, my friend, and I want to preview this fight. Let's get back to that in a minute, and I really appreciate you getting up early because I know you're on the West Coast. But
no,
you know,
don't be silly. Are you kidding?
It's so great that you are in your game, and you know, you continue to thrive in the boxing world, and you know, it's not easy to do that. You know, a lot of former boxers, you never hear from them again. But what's the key to, what do you think the key was for you? I mean, this obviously you got this opportunity on Sirius Radio, you and Randy Gordon hosting a weekly show. You're going to all these fights. So it must be a dream come true for you to be able to continue working in this world that you love so much.
Yeah. And I get to follow it and I tell people about it. You see, it was boxing was great back in my era when we were fighting with Holmes and there was so many Norton, there's so many great fighters. And then kind of, Don King kind of, in my opinion, raped and robbed the game so much that a lot of the people that would have became fighters left the game and went to play football, baseball, and basketball, other sports, and kind of boxing fell down for a while. And MMA came out and took over. We are back and so strong. And the thing for me was, I believe that because I was a big puncher, I didn't get all the wear and tear. I mean, I lost a couple of fights, but basically I was a big puncher, so I never had to go the distance. I never had to keep taking that pounding all the time. And I think it kept me alive. And I was smart enough to know that there was a rainy day coming, and I wanted to hold on to my money. And I protected myself. And listen, I'm so excited about my world right now. It's exciting to meet all these new people, and you know what we do. And we go around, and we help people, and we hang around with our celebrity friends, and we rub elbows, and we hear about their stories. We hear about their aches and pains, and how life is treating them. And man, we are so lucky. You and I too. I mean, listen, you got a great life. I mean, I'm excited for you. I love to hear what's going on for you. I love. People always tell me about Anne LaGoy. I'm always hearing about Anne LaGoy. So, listen, this is what we do. We have a nice set of people, and we're helping other people. And how can you go wrong with that?
That's right. That's right. You're so charitable, Jerry. You've been able to really spread the love, and as you say, you've done so much to give back to your sport. You wrote a lot about your childhood and what you had to overcome as a youth. So you have a lot of empathy for people who had it very, very tough. You had an abusive father. He was an alcoholic. You became an alcoholic. How tough was it, in this book to really open up and talk about your youth and your abusive dad?
Well, and it was very healing on one sense. And the other sense, it's always painful showing yourself. But listen, until you show yourself, you're never going to be free. And I want to be free. My brother passed away a couple of years ago, my younger brother, and he never got to really experience life. And so when that happened to me, I thought to myself, we're always telling ourselves, well, next year I'm going to take that trip. Next year I'm going to do that project. And you really realize that we have today. And I want to grab life today. And part of grabbing life is letting other kids and adults know that there's another way. And we can take ourselves out of that box and experience life in an exciting way.
And people relate to you because you've been through it. And as you say, talking about it was very healing. And you're not really made you tough, Jerry. I mean, your childhood, as difficult as it was, really tough physically and mentally.
Anne, in the book, I'm so glad you're bringing this up, that it's amazing that from where I came from, I was told you're no good, you're a failure, you're not going to mount anything. To making it to fight for the heavyweight championship of the world is unbelievable. And I never looked at it before, but listen, we keep kicking and scratching, and we want to fight to get to what we deserve. And although that road I took, although it was hard at times, I made it through. And I came out of the darkness. And man, I'll tell you what, for my whole life, I get to share that with people and let them know that there is hope. And you have to keep asking the question, can you help me? Can you help me? But that's the sad part of the book. The great part of the book is all the people I've made and the places I've been and the fights I got an opportunity to be in. And, man, I tell you what, I am so proud of where I came from, out where you are in Long Island, and the people that helped raise me.
That's right. You grew up in Huntington. You went to Walt Whitman High School. Tell me the story about sparring with a high school football coach. That sounded like an interesting story.
Well, that's a great story. I had this football coach who was kind of a bully. He thought he was a tough guy all the time. And when I used to carry my, it's really funny, but I used to carry my gloves with me because I'd box at the school stop, at the bus stop. I'd get there early and I'd box whoever was at the book stop, the bus stop. So one day I had him in school, and he said to me, why don't you bring the gloves back? I said, it's funny, I got him right here. So in front of the whole gym class, we put the gloves on, and I smacked him around, and it was, you know, it's like, you know, the bully. I always loved to handle the bullies, because the bullies pushed their weight around. They thought they could make people do what they want, and to me, he was a bully, and so I got to smack him around, and he took him off, and I never had another bad day with him because he never bothered me anymore.
I'm sure you were the school hero at that point. But were you as tall? I know you're 6'6". You towered over most of your opponents. But back in high school, were you that pretty much really taller than everybody else at that point, or no?
Well, when I was 16, I was 6'4", 160 pounds. So you could whip me. You had to whip me down and see me. But I was always a good puncher. And that's when I went into the Golden Gloves, and when I was 16 in Madison Square Garden, I fought in front of 21,000 people in the finals, and I knocked I was a 9-1 underdog in the finals, and I knocked the guy out in the second or third round and won the middleweight championship.
And that gave you so much confidence that you really needed, particularly at that point, because, you know, with the abusive household, you were, you know, you didn't have as much self-confidence, right?
No.
And in 1973, you go to the Garden in front of all these people, and who presents you the trophy? But none other than the legendary Jack Dempsey.
Listen to you, yeah,
right?
You're unbelievable. You're doing
what was
your work.
What was that like? Because you idolized this guy, obviously.
I did idolize that guy because he was boxing, and I got Fighter of the Year with Johnny Turner, who was also he's from Brooklyn. And we got to spend an hour or so with Jack Dempsey. And so, you know, for a little kid, for me, especially where I came from, I didn't really feel that excitement. But when I got out and got into the world, guys like Jack Dempsey helped me to keep the fight going, to keep trying, to keep moving forward. And that's all we can do. And so that was a great experience for me. Another one that gave me a boost to tell myself I can make it to the next level.
And then from there, talk about your career. Right after the Golden Gloves, what was next for you?
Well, what was so great for me was I wasn't crazy about my management, but one thing that they did and that I knew is they signed Howard Davis. Now, I don't know. I think you remember Howard Davis. He was a gold medal winner in 1976 from Glen Cove. His mother was sick and was dying during the Olympics. She wanted him to stay. He stayed. He won the gold medal. He won the best fighter of the Olympics that year. And he got signed by the guys that was managing me. So I knew that I was going to be showcased on all his cards. So that was one of the reasons why I took that management promotion, because I wanted to grow. I wanted to be seen. I wanted to be showcased. And signing with them helped me do that. And I, you know, went on about my career, and, you know, I love Long Island. I mean, listen, I used to run down the street, and the garbage trucks and the people would be, you know, it was the greatest feeling. You'd beep in the horn because I was like the Rocky on Long Island at that time.
You were. I mean, maybe you were the inspiration for the series. Who knows? But
that was Chuck Wepner, who's a very good friend of mine.
Yeah,
who's very sick and. He was the Rocky guy, but I became friends with all the people from the towns and the recreation, and so I got to develop the following. And listen, life, this the fight of life. Everybody's got to work 1-2 jobs a day. They got to hurry up home. They got to hustle. They got to pay their bills. So I was kind of like, you know, I love the Jets coming up. When every Sunday, if the Jets won, I felt like $1 million. So I became that for some people, that life is a struggle. And I love that feeling because I wanted to help people, because where I came from, I had no help. I had to find my own way. And so it just, everything and everybody fed each other. And it was a great experience.
Looking back at your career, Jerry, the wins, the losses, you know, Ken Norton, Michael Spinks, George Foreman. I mean, you were, as you say, fighting in a world when the heavyweight division was everything. I covered a lot of boxing years ago, you know, Evander Holyfield,
yes.
Tyson, George Foreman, the latter days of Foreman. What sticks out most in your mind, you know, the wins or the losses?
You know what? I'm going to tell you something. I got the night I knocked out Ken Norton in Madison Square Garden. I mean, this is in the book. I got scared, I guess. You know, that information my father gave me all those years, the pressure got on me, and I went to drinking, and I lost attention. I lost my focus. And that was the end of my career that night, little did I know. So, you know, listen, I love the fights. I love the people. I mean, I was with Frank Sinatra, with Bob Hope, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr. I mean, you can't believe back in those days the people that we saw while we were in Vegas
sure.
all the time. And so those experiences, the fights I was in, the fighting, you know, Larry Holmes and getting dropped in the second round and being on one knee and saying to myself in front of 35,000 people saying, what the hell are you doing here? But I got up and fought back, you know, and I fought back. I backed him up. I pushed him, knocking out Kenny Norton, Jimmy Young, Ron Lyle. There's so many great experiences that life offers us. But in the moment, I never really allowed myself to feel those feelings because I felt that if I felt them, they'd be taken away from me. And that's part of growing up in a dysfunctional, abusive household. And so by making this process and writing this book with John Grady, who's a great guy, it kind of helped me to really enjoy that part of my life that I never allowed myself to feel. So, man, I tell you what. Listen, I was in a war. I was in this experience that is so great and so high, and the high notes were high and the low notes were low, but we got through them. And I picked myself up off the floor and I dusted off my pants and I moved on. And that's a great story for people because we all struggle with that. We all struggle with trying to get to where we're going. We don't know how to get there, but we keep trying. And this book is all about that.
We're talking to Jerry Cooney, former boxer who emerged as the number one contender for the heavyweight championship of the world. And he co-wrote it with John Grady, who you mentioned, who actually is a licensed professional counselor, a licensed alcohol and drug counselor, certified in mental health and addiction. So it's a book really not only obviously about your boxing career, but really more about what you had to overcome as a victim of abuse and as an alcoholic and coming from, you know, this environment where, as you say, it was like a war almost every day. So many people can, you know, you probably touch so many people on a day-to-day basis, Jerry, because, you know, a part of your life has to touch the majority of people out there who are saying, man, this guy brings me hope. This guy brings me inspiration. Look what he's done with his life. I can kind of get out of my, all these obstacles that I'm suffering too, right? I mean, don't you feel that there's a part of this book that must touch so many people in the world?
Yeah, and thank you. And, you know, yes, the healing, you know, listen, I have to jump over the hurdle and I have to have the courage to stand in the room alone and figure out what I'm going to do and where am I going and then move forward. And in time, we don't stand still so long in that room. We move on and we move on and we move on. And you know, my God puts those people in my life that help me to have the strength to and the courage to move forward and to let somebody know about my blemishes and that I'm not so tough and that I'm scared. And then we get over that hurdle and then we move forward. And that's life. And that's the struggle and that's the hope and the love that we grow to have. And I was blessed to have those people touch me in those moments because I was available. And I said, yeah, I want more. I want to reach for the sky. I want to jump over this fence. I want to have those things that I'm supposed to have. And it's hard work. We have to struggle. We don't have to do it alone. And wow, I tell you what, it's been the greatest experience. I feel so happy to be on with you. You're so uplifting yourself. And these are the people that we're drawn to now. We're not drawn to the, let me knock the wind out of me and sit down on the floor for a while. I want to keep moving forward because life is short for all of us.
That's right. Well, who was the most positive influence in your life, looking back?
Oh, I had so many people. My trainer, Victor Valley. I think about this guy, Ray Noon, who I met in Florida. He was a retired cop. And just, you know what? Listen, I when you do the right thing happens.
That's right.
When you do the next right thing, that person comes into your life and you share it. I used to feel bad because I had a lot of female relationships. So I care and love these women so much, but I wasn't available to be in a relationship. And I tried and I wanted to be, but when it first got to be about love and, you know, marriage, I shut down because my experience of those things were terrible. And I hurt some relationships, and I tried to make amends. And those are big experiences that people need to know about. That, you know, I stayed in relationships way too long because I didn't want to hurt their feelings. And in doing it, you know, we all stayed stuck for so long. So there's a lot of stuff in the book that, you know, people are going to be able to experience, understand, and relate to. And I do. And I just gave it out. I threw it on the table, and we wrote it down in the book.
It's all out there, baby. And now you and your wife, yeah, Jennifer, have been married 25 years. You have a son,
wow,
and a daughter, right?
I have two sons. I have a 30-year-old son from a different relationship.
Right.
And we have two children, Jennifer and I. Christopher is my older relationship. He's a great kid. He works for a bank. Jackson's got in his fourth year of Lehigh University. And my daughter, Sarah, started Rutgers this year. So we have an empty nest, and we're enjoying that. And we'll get to travel and do things and come home to an empty house. And it's another change. It's another opportunity to grow.
And talk a little bit about your radio show, Jerry. You and Randy Gordon, Randy, who I've known forever.
Yes.
Talk about a great personality. I mean, you can't beat his personality, right?
You know, and I wish you could have been with me yesterday out here. We did a show, you know, we have Radio Row out here. The big fight's taking place out here in California. And so we got to talk to all these great champions, you know, Abner Morris, names can't come to me now, but all great fighters and great champions talking about their lives and their experiences. And so, we get to hear the hope and the joy and the fight in people. That's what we got to have, the fight. We got to have the fight in us, and we have to be directed. And of course, Randy's the funniest guy, and he's got so much experience. We went out to dinner last night to a great restaurant here with Kevin Ioli. He's a great writer. And the stories that we talked about for 2.5 hours between myself, Kevin Ioli, and Randy Gordon were just phenomenal. I told him we should have taped this. We could have made a book out of it.
Well, you have many, many books, I'm sure, in your head. And, you know, who I really do miss in the fight game, Jerry, is Bird Sugar. He was such a personality. Always supported my projects and any events that I asked him to come to. Don't you miss Bird Sugar? May he rest in peace.
Bird Sugar,
what a personality in the sport, right?
He knew everything about the game. He had an office in a bar. Randy Gordon worked for him for Ring Magazine in a bar. When you said that, one person, I also knew you were very friendly with Muhammad Ali.
Sure.
And he's a guy that I really miss. Joe Frazier, so many guys, Carmen Basilio. Listen, they went on and they're up with God right now. And that's when you look up in the dictionary of boxing, those are the pictures you see. And we were so lucky to rub elbows with those guys. And Muhammad Ali used to call my mother and tell her, it's going to be okay, I'm going to make it. And there was a big race, so with me and Larry Holmes, he came out and said that I'm not the white hope, I'm the right hope. And those kinds of moments that really hold America together and the world together, they just can't, you know, you just, wow. I mean, that was like life itself. And so I know you spent a lot of time with all those people because I also followed you all these years. And you were in the thick of everything too, and so.
Well, you know, when you talk about the most prolific personality in sport, Muhammad Ali,
yes,
has to be at,
yes,
the top of that list. So in your sport of boxing, you're talking about a guy,
yes,
that transcended boxing and just became just such an influence around the world, Muhammad Ali. I'll never forget the luncheon I had with him, sitting next to him at Mickey Mantle's restaurant. It was, you know, he's at that point, it had to have been maybe in the mid-90s. He couldn't really communicate that well because of the Parkinson's disease.
Yes.
But he spoke with his eyes, you know, and it was just, what a couple hours I had just spending time with him. Yeah. I felt like we communicated, even though he couldn't talk that well at
you
that
know,
point.
That was so sad. That was so sad because, you know, he saw Joe Louis and he thought he never wanted to become like that. But he loved the attention. He loved the game so much. He was a warrior. And when the war was over, he had nothing. So he kept fighting. And the problem was that, you know, when you can, he talked early on about how well he could take a shot or you couldn't hit him. And then at the end, he was taking those shots. And we found out since then that, you know, with football and other contact sports, that those mental problems happen from the brain. And so, yeah, I mean, I remember seeing him walking down in the airport, and he had a glow to him. And so many great moments with him, being in the ring with him, talking, fooling around with him. So, listen, we had those great moments, and people can remember those moments. But, Ann, when I hear your voice, I smile for the life you bring to this world and what you do. And when we do the Head Injury Association, and whenever I see you, I mean, you're so positive, and that's what the world needs more of, and that's what I try and be like. I try to be like you and people like that to let people know, listen, there's a lot of love in this world, and we got to help each other sometimes, and that's what my book is about, and that the end is a success, and that we make it, and we make it, and that's what really life is about. And so, I mean, that's why I'm so glad to be on with you this morning, because that's my life. And did I make mistakes? Did I hurt people sometimes? Yes. I tried to make them things right. And when things I couldn't do right, I play it forward today in helping other people. So that's what we do.
And it's really a true testament to, you know, your determination and courage and willpower to overcome the many obstacles that you endured as a child. And now you're thriving in the world that you love. Let's quickly talk about the fight tonight, the IBF welterweight championship. You got the major favorite, Spence versus Porter, who's the underdog from my neck of the woods. I grew up in Ohio. Porter's from Ohio. How do you see that fight going tonight, Jerry, at the Staples Center?
Well, I want to tell you something. I'm a very big fan of Sean Showtime Porter. And Errol Spence, believe it or not, I don't know if your listeners know, he was born in Long Island. And then at an early age, he moved out to Texas. So he's a New Yorker from Long Island.
Wow.
He's one of us. And he is a beast. He was in the Olympics. He didn't win the gold medal, but back then they said he's going to be the fighter to watch. And he's in with a guy by the name of Sean Porter, who's in great shape. I think he lacks a little bit the skills like Errol Spence has. So, listen, I hate to make a prediction, but that's my business. That's what I do. So I have to tell you, it's going to be a great fight. Tune in. It's on Fox or pay-per-view. And I have to think it's going to go 8 and 9 and 10 rounds. And I think that Errol Spence will get the best of Sean Porter. Unfortunately, I love that guy, and he's been a great personality in and out of the game. And the other fight is Anthony Durrell is fighting a guy by the name of David Benavidez, who's a fantastic 168-pounder and who wants to move up to light heavyweight. Light heavyweight is the toughest division in boxing right now. So we're going to see two great fights. And my opinion is I think Durrell and Benavidez is going to steal the show tonight, the semifinal fight. But these guys are four great fighters. And they're working hard to be the best. And you cannot knock these guys for anything. They're throwback fighters from the old days.
So the super middleweight title bout you think is going to be the one to watch. And, you know, as I said, when I was covering boxing, it was really all about the heavyweight division. Do you miss those personalities? And is boxing as healthy as it once was in just different divisions now?
I miss fighting. I wish I was fighting now and knew what I know now, fighting. But, you know, the heavyweight division is great. We've got six or eight guys that are great fighters in the heavyweight division. Plus, we got like three or four or five younger kids coming up that are great talents. So, you know, yes, boxing, in order for boxing to be held up, it used to have to be a heavyweight division. Now it's the welterweight, the lightweight. I mean, Lomachenko, you got the light heavyweight division are fantastic. So, listen, I tell people all the time, on your computer page, put on Boxing Scene or ESPN Boxing, and look at a couple of the stories once or twice a week and start to follow it again. It's back on regular mainstream television so people can watch it. And it is fantastic, a fantastic game. And I just love it. And listen, Long Island's had some great fighters. Chris Algieri, the Jewish Hammer. You know, we got a lot of great fighters from out there that fight. So, you know, and listen, we're passing through here. I want to tell people, we're not here forever. We're here for a short time. Live, experience, love. You know, I keep wanting to be more intimate with my wife. I want to learn how to do those things instead of being busy with life too much, you know?
We continue to learn as we get older, right? We keep trying until we get it right.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
One of the things people always, I meet, they always want to fight with me. And I always tell them, listen, don't worry, we'll fight. Don't worry about a headgear, I tell them, because it's not going to last that long. So I still got a little bit of fight in me, and listen, we just keep passing each other around.
You have a lot of fight in you, and it's so great to hear your enthusiasm. It's contagious. Good luck with continued success with the book, Gentleman Jerry, A Contender in the Ring, A Champion in Recovery. Enjoy the fight tonight, and Jerry, you know how much I enjoy your friendship through the years, and really, really appreciate you coming on the show this morning.
Listen, Ann, I always love you. You hear me?
Thank you.
I always love you.
I love you too, my friend. I love you too.
Thank you, my dear.
All right. Have a great day. Take care. All right. We're going to take, thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk to Diana DeLuca, the CEO of Golf Kitchen. So from boxing to golf and food, I guess we love all three, right? Jerry Cooney is one of my favorite personalities, and Diana is just very, very special as well. Just a extremely talented photographer and publisher of this gorgeous magazine called Golf Kitchen. More about that in a minute. Sports Interview with Ann LaGoria is brought to you in part by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Robe Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course and timeless pieces for men and women. Go to dunejewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses, PEAK Vision Sunglasses, zero distortion, unmatched clarity, change your game. PeakVision.com. I feel the shadows hanging over. Been waiting to come closer, to come and take me away. And I can feel my heart skip every time that I slip. I wanna run away.
The following is a public service announcement from WPPB. The next North Fork Art District Tour will take place on Sunday, October 27th, with an immersive day of contemporary artworks, including tours of the Alex Ferrone Gallery, William Riss Gallery, and the studios of Max Moran, Scott McIntyre, and Lori Hollander. Meet artists, view exciting exhibits, and watch creative demonstrations. The tour finishes at the Halyard Restaurant in Greenport, with a pairing dinner featuring Lens Wines and a live art auction. Tickets at northforknow.org.
365 days a year, WPPB is working for you on the air and on our website. WPPB has a helpful community calendar on our site. Just go to 883wppb.org to the community calendar tab and tell us about your activity or event. It's free, easy, and fast. WPPB is the voice of the community, 365 days a year, 7 days a week, on the air and online. Spread the word about your community events. Go to 883wppb.org.
Join us, won't you, for Radio Deluxe. I'm John Pizzarelli from high atop Lexington Avenue in the Deluxe living room. Along with Jessica Mulaski, we host a show that is great talk and wonderful music. Join us this week, won't you? For Radio Deluxe.
Listen Sundays at 1 on 88.3 FM.
I woke up to a message of love, jumping up from the smoke of my brain.
Well, welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori on this gorgeous Saturday morning. So glad to join you where I am every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 Eastern Standard Time. You can hear us from anywhere online at 883-WPPB.org. And each show is archived at AnneLiguori.com and on podcasts. And a good morning to Diana DeLucia, the CEO of a publication called Golf Kitchen. I am looking at this right now, Diana. It's a beautiful publication and a true testament to your talents as a not only a photographer, but as an interviewer, journalist, and really a publisher of these very high-end booklets and magazines. Good morning. How are you?
Great to be here. How are you? It's been a while.
It's been a while. It's a gorgeous day. I know you spend a lot of time out here on the East End. In fact, one of the features in this Golf Kitchen edition is, and I love this feature, about the beekeeper at Sabonic Golf Club. And he said he had a farm stand in West Hampton. I'm wondering which farm stand that is. But it's just, you know, some of the ideas in this are just so clever, Diana, in Golf Kitchen.
Thank you. It's a labor of love, and we like to highlight the talent in the industry that's not generally spoken about, and beekeepers are one of those things, and the bees are so precious. And Mr. Pascucci over there at Sabonic is very passionate about taking care of the land and being a steward, so I'm pretty proud of that story.
Yeah, and you also pointed out in that story that, you know, there are a lot of, there's a lot of honey now on the market that's not really legitimate honey, right? You have to be so careful, you know. So, I'm learning a lot by reading these articles in Golf Kitchen. I know you were at our event in June, and we are so delighted to have you because we do this VIP dinner the night before. And, Matthew Weissman was there. Ironically, he flies in with all the great talent here in New York, right, Diana? Matthew Weissman flies in from Detroit with his company Motor City Seafood and his chef, Chef Joe, and they just did a great job. Talk about a little bit about your observations of what they made that night, and thanks again for including it in, you know, the publication.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a pleasure. I really enjoyed attending the event. And I was really surprised, pleasantly surprised, how amazing the food was that Chef Joe had created. He had a whole spread of, people were spoiled. The wine was great, and he had oysters from, I think there were special oysters from Long Island, and then he had produce from farms that he bought in from all over Detroit and Michigan, obviously, and the seafood. I was, blown away. He's a fantastic chef.
I mean, he had sea bream tartare, he had, the crab cakes, as you mentioned, surf and turf, and he brought in these foods from all over the country, all over the world, really, not just Long Island and the Midwest, where they came from, but, and then they had, specialty desserts and wines, and, it must be fun for you. I mean, you travel all over to these different, events. You put a lot of these events together, but you go to these country clubs, these private clubs all over, and experience what really impressed me, was the background of a lot of these personalities that are in these positions, whether they're the head chefs or the heads of food and beverage. It's a real industry that, I'm not as familiar with and I'm learning more about, but talk about the training involved. I know one of the gentlemen you interviewed was from the gentleman from Royal Poinciana Golf Club. Yeah. And his background, at the Greenbrier and then Tavern on the Green, Peacock Alley and the Waldorf, Augusta National. I mean, these personalities have a very extensive and very prestigious, very extensive background working at these prestigious clubs and or restaurants. And you kind of highlight that, right?
Yes, yeah. And they really deserve to be highlighted. The amount of work and training that goes into being a chef at a place like Augusta National, for example, for 5 years, that is, that's huge. And just to even gain that position is just amazing for any chef. Scott Hagerly is his name. And He's an absolutely wonderful chef. He's down at, he's actually a culinary director now at Royal Ponciano in Naples, Florida. And when I was down there, what I got to witness was one of the biggest kitchens I've ever seen in a club. And I think it's like an $18 million kitchen.
Wow.
Just finished just recently. And he is mentoring all of his young head chefs. And he's totally, how would I say it, very humble. Very, very humble. He came up and he cooked at the Golf Kitchen Awards at Glen Arbor last month. And, I mean, he was just great to have around. And all-round great chef, great director. And we'll be seeing more of him at Golf Kitchen events in the future.
Well, you've created this whole industry. You know, where you're showcasing, it's this whole culture of showcasing, you know, people who deal with cuisine at these private golf clubs. And I know you just recently did this dinner at Glen Arbor. Can you talk a little bit about that and the event part of your company?
Yeah, we started the awards at Edgewood in 2018, and we've now moved to Glen Arbor on a permanent basis. And we kind of tailored the event, and we all got together, everyone that was at Edgewood and everyone that was at the event this year, and we're just growing it as an industry, these awards. It's not like a one-woman show. Like, there has to be a lot of people involved in awards. It's not just me. There's a lot of chefs involved, a lot of clubs involved. Menu planning, wine planning, things like that. But it went off really well, and I'm really proud of it. And I'm actually going over there today to
right.
Glen Arbor later on today to talk about next year's event.
Glen Arbor, being in Bedford, up in Westchester, and you know, a lot of these clubs known for golf, known for their very challenging, beautiful golf courses, but the whole other element is culinary, and you're bringing that out. What is Glen Arbor known for in that world?
Glen Arbor is very well known for their wines. They have a lot of wine owners from California, from Napa and Sonoma, that actually own houses in that region, in the area around Bedford and the club. So they're very wine-centric. I was just at a wine dinner that they had the other night. It was their black tie event, and it was fantastic. And it was actually called the Traditions of Excellence Wine Dinner. And, you know, I had to sit down and have this amazing wine tasting in a room full of men with black ties.
Tough job. Somebody has to do it, Diana, right? And what about closer to you know, where this radio station is here on the east end of Long Island? What would you say from a culinary perspective? What would Sabonic and West Hampton Country Club or any other clubs that you've worked with out here, what would they be known for?
Well, on the culinary side.
Yes.
Well, Chef Giacobinello at Sabonic, his background is impeccable. He's the most humble chef. The members love him. He comes from a background of working with Alain Ducasse and Daniel Ballou, Le Cirque. His dad's the ex-CEO of Leading Hotels of the World, Joe Giacobinello. And he's the most humble, kindest, and very talented chef, but he has the ability to create the most simple of dishes, but makes them outstanding. And one of those examples, he makes a oxtail ravioli, something like that, and it is absolutely, you cannot, if you've had his, it's very hard to have anyone else's.
Really? Yeah, I mean, a lot of these, the menus that these clubs are to die for. I know Atlantic does a great job with their cuisine. We were at West Hampton Country Club this year for our charity tournament, and you were even pointing out in your Golf Kitchen publication, they have a signature drink there. Do you remember
that's the West Hampton.
Yeah,
yeah,
talk a little
Hampton.
Bit about
they
that.
Do. Oh, goodness. You're asking me to remember the recipe.
It's called the West Hampton, and it looks like there's a lot of vodka in there, some pomegranate juice, club soda. It looks really refreshing.
Well, speaking of West Hampton, Anne, because I had come to the event at your event, I had met Chef Tim Trill at West Hampton, so I was so impressed by his knowledge that I invited him to cook at the awards. Now, at the awards, he created a lamb dish, and I can't tell you, my daughter wrote a whole essay about just that one dish.
Really?
So everyone at the event was just amazed at the glaze that he had put on the lamb, and it was like kind of like a little Asian twist to a lamb dish, and it was a sensation.
Wow. Like, next time I see the chef at West Hampton Country Club, I'll have to say, hey, can I sample the lamb dish?
Oh, most definitely, and tell him I sent you.
I definitely will. Wow. You know, that's good to know. So you kind of bring all these, you know, very talented chefs together in our world of golf and promote them and showcase them. And I'm sure it's become competitive now amongst a lot of these chefs, right?
I think the golf, once I work with the golf kitchen, they work with the magazine or the books, I kind of have this ability to pick chefs that are going to get along, because so far everybody really cares about each other.
That's awesome.
We have events in Mexico, and we have the awards. Everyone gets together. They get to collaborate, which was unusual 10 years ago in the private club industry. Now it's great. You know, we are organizing events overseas. We're trying to get chefs to be able to come to different countries so they can experience time away from the club and get to know other cuisines, which improves their skills. So it's great.
And you have upcoming trips to Bermuda and Puerto Rico planned?
I'm excited. I'm really excited about going to Puerto Rico because I get to work with my friend Jose Carley, who has been with Golf Kitchen since 2010, since the day one. He's cooked at every event that we have, and he now has his own restaurant called Downtown Boquerón in Boquerón, Puerto Rico. And
wow.
I get to go fishing for 3 days.
Nice.
And doing lots of interviews and photography, so I'm excited about that.
And you love food and you love photography, so to combine the two must be very satisfying for you.
It is, but it's also, as you know, when you can kind of, when you feel that you have helped somebody else rise up, I think that's super rewarding to me personally.
Sure. And you've promoted many of these very talented chefs and told their stories, and they all have stories, and they all have worked extremely hard in their careers to get to the levels where they are now. Diana, I know you've worked extremely hard to get to this level as the CEO of your publication, Golf Kitchen. Continued success, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon as you and I are working on some projects as well. So I love the publication. It's so well done, and really all your hard work has paid off. Congratulations.
Thank you, Anne. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Diana DeLucia, the CEO of Golf Kitchen. She's the founder of the Golf Kitchen Culinary Excellence Awards, host of Golf Kitchen events, and photographer and book producer extraordinaire. Thank you so much. And my thanks to Jerry Cooney, who joined us in the first half of the show, author with John Grady of Gentleman Jerry, A Contender in the Ring, A Champion in Recovery. My thanks to Carl Lynch, our engineer. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy this gorgeous weather. I'll talk to you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Anne Liguori.